That makes confession of sin the promoter of sin.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for April 30th, 2015, from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought from the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you today from the highly sanitized GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we say, not everything that happens is God's will. If everything that happens is God's will, then it is God's will for me to tell you that not everything that happens is God's will. And here emerging from his inner sanctuary in Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Barris. I'm going to start asking for warnings on these things that you do first. It's like, I start out as a silly giggle box every time. So
I love it.
And you love doing it, too.
I enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I like having the power over another human, you see, like that.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you, mate?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Now, Mike, this week we have a bunch of stuff to cover. I don't know if we're going to do it in under a two-hour show, but let's give it a burl and we'll see. We'll see what we achieve here.
I'm only going to record an hour with you, so we'll see.
That's okay. You record an hour and I'll record the other hour. That gives us 2 hours, right? Let's try and stay with me here, Michael.
It's hard to keep up.
First off, we have a question from, I think it's Bernie Rouse. It's it says here Burns Rouse, B-E-R-N-S, but I think it's Bernie Rouse. And he has written to freedom@gospelrevolution.com. If you want to mail us, and I don't put this a tag, I don't tag the end of the show with this, but if you want to mail us, send it to freedom@gospelrevolution.com. It goes straight to the desk of Jeffrey Robertson, who then sends it to whoever needs to read it. He says, hi, Mike and Barris. Ivan Rogers, now there's an old friend of ours.
Yes.
In his book, Dropping Hell and Embracing Grace, makes these two statements. One, the word hell is nowhere to be found in the existing manuscripts of the Hebrew Old Testament. And on page 140, he says that. And then on page 142, he says, the King James translators of the Old Testament mistranslated Sheol 31 times as hell. Recently, I purchased a Jewish Bible, the Tanakh, the Holy Scriptures, as original translation of the Holy Scriptures into contemporary English. I thought I would look up the 31 scriptures to see how the Jewish scholars translated them. In Proverbs 23:14, Sheol is translated grave. In Isaiah 57:9, Sheol is translated the netherworld. The other 29 verses, which the King James translates Sheol as hell, the Jewish Bible says Sheol. In other words, they don't, can't, or won't translate it, but leave the Hebrew word in this English translation. Why would they do that? Best regards, Bernie Rouse.
Barris?
Yes. You're not gonna get away with this for the rest of the show, because there's one coming up from our friend Mong, which you are gonna lead us in. A merry little thing.
This
one's mine. Okay. Bernie, this is one of the commonest questions that we get from people who are suddenly realizing that the translation of the Bible is not everything it's been put up to be. As far as this particular word goes, and we did cover a couple of these last week, but we just can't cover this stuff enough. There are 16 words in the Bible, all of which are translated into one word in English, hell. Now, if I had 16 words in English, if I said red, blue, green, black, grass, tree, dog, cat, and I translated the whole lot into another language as a flower vase, you would think really that something was wrong, wouldn't you? Ivan Rogers is right on top of this. What happens is no translation of the Bible, scriptures or New Testament has ever been made except through man's theology. See, if my theology says there's a bad place and people are going to go to it, then when I see references to what might be a bad place, let's say in the New Testament, outer darkness, only ever mentioned once, or in the Old Testament, the netherworld, we really have no idea what that means. But hey, what the heck, if I have hell as a set-up doctrine, then I'm going to translate it probably as hell.
Yeah, and isn't it funny that was so manufactured in the Catholic religion for all of us. Us Protestants picked it up also. But it was so manufactured, and it was so extreme and so final and so unacceptable that the Catholic Church had to create a purgatory to kind of soften the blow.
Isn't that amazing?
So you create one false thing, and it's so damn bad, you got to create something else that, you know, you'll be in purgatory for maybe 1,000 years. Same as hell, but just not there all the time. You got a way out.
Yeah, you've got to get a way out, and then, of course, you have got to make up another doctrine. If you give us a few coins, we can get you out quicker.
Yes. And the gospel revealing righteousness, traditions of men prevent the revelation of righteousness. Therefore, it prevents the power of God, based on Paul's definition of it. There is no revelation of righteousness in the traditions and doctrines of men.
None.
There's only a revelation of righteousness in the gospel.
And just before we leave that topic, Bernie, we can trace the development of this doctrine of hell back to two gentlemen. One was called Jerome. The other one was called Augustine. And they were contemporaries. They lived from the mid-300s all the way through to 420, 430. And these guys established the doctrine of hell. Translationally, it was done by Jerome. And theologically, it was his counterpart in what was to be very shortly to become the Catholic Church, Augustine. Together, they invented this whole thing.
Gospel Revolution.
We have a Bonehead of the Day award today, mate. We haven't had one for a couple of weeks.
You mean we're running out of boneheads?
I doubt that, mate. Not at the rate that you guys churn them out in the States, I tell you. Here's a story in the Huffington Post. Now, Michelle Bachmann thinks that Obama is causing the apocalypse. We don't really give a rip too much about politics because it just doesn't matter who you vote for. The government always gets in, and somehow or other it just seems to go around in circles. But she says, now, do you want to explain to our audience who Michelle Bachmann is?
Michelle Bachmann is a senator from Minnesota. I think she's serving her last term right now. This is, I think she's at the end of her last term.
Oh, she better be. Michelle Bachmann says a rapture is coming thanks to President Barack Obama's policies on Iran's nuclear program and marriage equality. In a radio interview last week, Bachmann, the former Minnesota Republican congresswoman, told End Times host, End Times, oh, how you love them, Jan Markell, we need to realize how close this clock is getting to the midnight hour. Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. I remember hearing that when I was 12 in the Brethren Assembly. Oh, hang on. No, I heard it again in the Baptist church. And then I heard it again 30 years later. No, and I've heard this my whole life.
I will rise at early morning when my Lord gives me the warning that the solar age is dawning, and that's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me.
Here we are again, 2015, and the same thing's being said by an elected official.
No. No, the same thing's being said by a
Bonehead of the Day.
Did Michelle get it this week? Oh, my goodness.
Yep, Michelle got
it. Well, you know, and here's the convoluted thing about this is that, I think there's verses about praying for the end, and to, you know, if the end of the world is a prophecy that is God's plan, then how does that make the person who's causing it to be hurried along? But can it be hurried along if it is a specific time frame prophecy, which that's what they say? So how could he be bringing it about if it's going to come about regardless of
God's will?
Yes, you know, or regardless of what people do.
You weren't listening at the beginning of the show, were you? Not everything that happens is God's will. But if everything that happens is God's will, then it's God's will for me to tell you that not everything that happens is God's will.
Exactly. You know, here's one of those points where you wish someone would develop circular thinking. It was like, you're not even going in a circle. You're just standing still being crazy.
You may be wondering what's going on. You heard what Michael said. Is that right or wrong? Don't be shy now, pick up the phone, call. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the Gospel Revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the Gospel Revolution.
Now, in our WTF segment this week, Michael.
Worlds that fly?
Worlds that fly.
Yeah.
Fly apart as you try to apply any kind of logic to them. Last week, we were praising a Chicago cardinal who slipped off the planet and didn't come home for soup because of the incredibly good work he did and the stand he took on pedophilia in the Catholic Church. But this, it's just amazing, you know. For every good story you get, the next week, a couple of bad ones come along. And here's this week's. The Vatican is once again at the center of a scandal, this time with two separate damning incidents involving Catholic priests in Italy. The first, which took place in the north of the country, incorporates an Italian priest who allegedly surfed the internet searching for homosexual lovers and took part in gay orgies. He has since been removed from his post. In the second, more outrageous episode, a priest is suspected of murdering his parishioner after female bones were discovered under the church's flagstones.
There are wonderful people in these screwed up messes. There are people who actually know that pedophilia is not something that you're supposed to allow happen and pass the pedophile on to the next parishioners in another town. There's people in Catholicism who know that's not right. In fact, the vast majority of them, I would say, really do know that's not right.
And the vast majority of them really do not do this.
No, exactly. Even of the priests that are there, we assume that the vast majority are not pedophiles. We also know that just like the cardinal who just passed away, that we were able to speak well of, and but you see, there's a lot of them we're able to speak well of. When we or I speak up against Christianity, Bears, it is not against anyone there. It's against a system that causes these things to be couched there.
There you go.
This is where, when you teach on sin and forgiveness, I watched a man that I once knew, that's as far as I will go, sit and talk about how that a man who breaks up another man's marriage and then marries his wife, that man's life will be shortened. Now, this man is 87 years old, sitting there. I know this man broke up a man's wife, marriage, and is married to a married woman. And I thought, this is amazing. He's sitting and sticking true to his doctrine of condemning people, but he's guilty of it. But then he explained in detail. But now, if you judge yourself,
here it comes.
If you judge yourself with Jesus, Jesus is so good. Jesus is so nice.
Nice.
If you judge yourself, it's like you never did it. It's just like you never done it.
Oh.
You see, so the two doctrines work so hand in glove to excuse this man for what he did and yet condemn everybody else for what they're doing. And it's exactly the same thing.
It's exactly what Paul talked about when he says, when he described people accusing and excusing each other.
Oh.
Mate, I am in the middle of building my summer garden. It's all right. Well, it's actually pretty much done. But there are certain things I've got to have in place in order to, in order to have everything happen. I've got a watering system in there, and that system's got to be working and got to be functional. And I've got a heating system, and I've got seeds, and I've got earth, and I've got water, and all that good stuff. In other words, I've created an environment in which certain things can happen and certain other things cannot happen. When we see in religion, and don't think this is just Catholicism, family.
Oh,
when I was a young man, an elder of our church had a little go at me. And years later, as I sat across a table challenging him, he said, well, you must have wanted it because otherwise you wouldn't have let it happen. And that was in the Brethren Assemblies. Now, I don't know one denominational group in which this does not happen.
No, exactly.
But when you create the system that makes it possible for A, this to occur, and B, this to be covered up, what you have, don't tell me you've got the New Testament church. Don't tell me a New Testament church, if you didn't throw all your money at the apostles' feet, apparently you'd cark it.
Yeah.
You'd drop dead on the spot. Don't tell me you believe in the New Testament church, and don't tell me you believe in anything much that Jesus stood for.
So what doctrine is it that supports all of this? The story I just told you about the gentleman I once knew, mm-hmm. and the story about the pedophilia in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, there's one doctrine that holds it all together: confession of sins,
mm-hmm.
which is judging yourself.
Yeah.
If you judge yourself, God won't judge you. You got to judge yourself. Then God's judgment's all gone. Isn't that amazing? And then suddenly it's as though you just never did it. It's like you never did it. I mean, and it's just amazing. I mean, you could feel the Spirit of the Lord coming across the camera as he began to tear up about, and you could feel the people listening to him getting this wave and this rush of the presence of the Spirit when he said, but now with Jesus, if you judge yourself, even if you did this, if you judge yourself, it's like you never did it. It's like you never did it. And you can just feel the wave of all the mercy and compassion of God while the man is sitting there excusing himself and condemning those. The only difference between him and the other man who's going to die early for breaking up another man's marriage, the only difference between him is he judged himself and the other man is judged by God. He confessed his sin. The other man didn't confess his sin. So what does that make confession of sin? That makes confession of sin the promoter of sin.
Oh, man, the confession of sin is a promoter. That's good. Okay, we have a question here sent in from... Now, look, I went back through all of my emails, and I think I missed some of these, and I think I may be doing some twice. I really don't know, so I'm just covering a whole bunch of things. Paul Vigors in the UK sent us this. He said, hi, the Apostle Paul wrote that when we die, we become absent from the body and present with the Lord. Are we not already present with the Lord now, if we and God are one? Now, as I was reading this, April 8, this came in, so I don't think this has gone to air yet, but I remember you actually addressing this very thing just, was it last week or the week before?
I put a teaser out. I don't think I didn't address it because it's one of the things I'm going to be teaching on in Cullman, Alabama. The context. The context of this, you'd have to include the last part of Paul's letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and you'd have to include his teaching before this and all the way through this to see what absent from the body is to be present with the Lord actually is talking about. Let me say this. And Barris and I both have relied on this in being questioned about where do we go when we die. Well, we don't know, but we know to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. That's what I've always done, and Barris and I have spoken of it. We've not talked about this in detail, though, except really basically what people have heard us kind of exchanging about the possibilities of this. But let me assure you that this doesn't mean what we take it to mean, me and Barris both included. Now, everybody knows that there's, when you're talking about the body, there's different bodies that the New Testament speaks of. We do know one is called the body of sin, right?
Yeah.
So there is an entire subject in Paul's teaching called the body of sin,
which was done away. Yeah, yes.
Right. And the body of sin is done away with. We know that is true. And there's more possibilities if the context bears it out that this is not talking about our physical end of life, but it's talking about the death that we all died in Christ, that the body of sin to be absent from that body, because it's true. See, if we take that as to be absent from the physical body is to be spiritually present with the Lord, that means that to be, because Paul said it right after it, Paul said to be present in the body is to be absent from the Lord. What? But to be present in which body?
You telling me I've got to go back to all those funerals and redo them?
One at a time. So here we just, and again, we're just dropping this out there. But see, we know that the second part of that statement is not true. That's what gives us an indication that something is wrong in the state of Denmark.
Oh, you Shakespearean fan. I never knew you were into Shakespeare.
Only when it's convenient. Oh. We know that to be present in the body does not mean to be absent from the Lord. So that's what gives us pause and reason to question if being absent from the body is to be present with the Lord means what we have thought it to mean. And let me assure you, it don't mean what we thought it meant. Come to Coleman.
Coleman, Alabama, on the 16th and 17th, Saturday and Sunday, May. That's only 16 days away, guys. And I'll be there on the 15th. Jeff is probably going to be there a day early, but I'm not going to tell you where he is. You can ask him that. And the esteemed Mr. Michael Williams will be there from, I think, the Friday night through to Sunday, and he'll be leaving probably as soon as the second session on Sunday's over. We have two sessions a day, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Be there. You are going to get some wonderful, wonderful food. You're not going to be sorry you made it.
The incredible responsibility that we have as believers to speak up when the scriptures, the law, the psalms, and the prophets is spoken of as though they were nothing. I speak concerning the judgments that are spoken of by Peter in his writings, and I condemn them. Isaiah didn't say this is a rule, you got to do this. He said this is your heritage, that we should condemn every tongue that rises in judgment, and you should let no one stand and speak as though it is nothing.
Now, Michael, let's have a look at this question by... Oh, no. We have a letter here from Don Dupre. And oh, cool. I wanted to read this to you. It's a long, longish letter, but here it goes. Dear Brother Mike, I met you about 22 years ago when you were speaking in Winnipeg, regarding grace. That weekend of teaching opened my eyes to what grace really was about. At that time, I was attending the Worldwide Church of God, headed by Herbert W. Armstrong. Your enlightenment helped me leave the old covenant teachings of that organization. Then my wife and myself found a local Baptist church to attend. We've been attending there for several years and were involved in many service duties, seminars, programs, and so forth. And yet something wasn't right. We just didn't feel like we belonged, and I had many doubts regarding the heaven and hell doctrines that were taught. So much so that I never became a member, because doing so meant I would have to lie. My heart told me that the God I knew was not involved in sending most people to be tortured forever. So I sat on the sideline of that church until about 6 months ago. I had a visit with an old friend who, back when we were introduced to your teachings, we would purchase and listen to the tapes of your ministry. And he had an entire box of this material, which was given to me. I began listening to this material and was introduced for the first time to the Gospel of Peace. Also today I finished reading your book 1, The Gospel According to Mike. I feel like this information is what I have been wanting and craving and waiting for, and I also feel both great joy and shame in that how could I have been so gullible and led astray all these years immersed in religion. Now I realize that churches like the United Church, which I used to make fun of, are closer. I'm wondering if he's talking about Unitarian.
No, he's talking about the United Church of Canada.
Now I realize that churches like the United Church of Canada, which I used to make fun of, are closer to the gospel truth than I was. I thank you and all your ministry personnel for teaching the true gospel. In many ways, I feel I am just beginning to on the journey into this marvelous gospel. I look forward to learning more. Again, Michael, thank you for all you have sacrificed to teach this truth. I plan to send a copy of 1 to a friend who has been turned off by religion since leaving the former Worldwide Church of God. Thank you for everything, Brother Don. Wow. Can I start off here?
You sure may.
Don Dupre, this is what we live for. Thank you.
Yes, Don. And also, folks, this is a glimpse into a window over 20 years ago. Very powerful intervention took place by those that were held captive by Herbert W. Armstrong in the Worldwide Church of God. This was a worldwide denomination that what you just heard happened in Don's life happened in tens of thousands of Worldwide Church of God people's lives, and with my tapes.
You know, mate, I remember back in the day, I used to listen a lot to R.C. Sproul, Calvinist, Presbyterian, just a wonderful thinker, but nonetheless a dyed-in-the-wool Calvinist. And he was praising the hierarchy of this church. This wasn't that long ago. This was only about, I'd been listening to your tapes since about 2000, and this would have been in about 2005 or 2006 maybe. I was listening to him actually say how much the Worldwide Church of God had changed and how unusual it was for a denomination to inspect itself in this fashion. And I had no idea, as I was sitting in my car listening to him do that, I had no idea it was you that had brought this change about.
Yeah, and let's look back, step back and look at ourselves. This was imposed upon them. If they hadn't made the changes that they did in accepting some ideas about grace, the doors would be shut, because half of that worldwide church quit. We had one church there in Winnipeg had about 900 members. And within just a couple of months after my tape started being circulated, that church was reduced to between 1 and 200. Even when I don't show up at church, I destroy churches. I didn't even show up. Yeah. I didn't even show up. But here now...
You're the thing. You're probably the thing that nowadays those people, they scare their children. If you don't be good, Mike Williams will come and get you.
The reason this is such an important window for us, and I really, Don, thank you. It's been a great encouragement to me, because Don is like the thousands and thousands and thousands of other worldwide Church of God folks who heard my tapes enough to get freed from that worldwide Church of God. Then, of course, at the very same time, the controversy about my personal life began to swirl, and people began to feel that they had to back away from me, even though the teaching that I'd brought them had set them completely free. So here we have these folks out there by the tens of thousands who migrated back into some form of churches, who are migrating right back out again, who still desperately need to hear the conclusions of the gospel that they began to hear 22 years ago during the collapse of the worldwide Church of God. And it's not just the worldwide Church of God, but other denominations were brought down to their knees simply by tapes being shared. The entire Hutterite colonies all across the northern tier states and all across Canada, there were entire colonies. This is like the closest I could come to you explaining this would be like Amish, but they spoke with German accents, and they were all born in Canada. And these colonies spread, and one of their larger colonies was in the Yukon. That colony closed completely. We used to have people from the Hutterite colony sneaking into our meetings, their children who had broke loose from the Hutterite colonies and wearing normal clothes would sneak their little mamas and grandmas in wearing full garb, you know, and they'd stand up and just to praise the Lord. We just want to thank the Lord for Brother Mike's teaching. We'd have never known the grace of God if it hadn't been for Brother Michael.
You're sounding like the Swedish chef.
I know. That's why these guys sounded though.
Oh, okay.
And they were born in Canada. What we're saying here, folks, is the gospel revolution exploded on planet Earth a little over 20 years ago. You know, Bears, I've been in three different positions in Christianity that I could be a very wealthy, wealthy man right now.
Have.
Number one was my testimony, my deliverance from homosexuality. That testimony alone, which I desperately needed that testimony, and I needed to believe that testimony, and I did believe that testimony alone opened my life up to an influx of funds that you would not even believe. And I was invited around the world to share that testimony. I could have stayed right there and just sold books and published. I would have been, oh my gosh, do you realize how many TV shows I'd be on by now being touted by the religious right? After that, Barris, I became very proficient for whatever reasons in teaching the doctrine of the Word of Faith. Folks, I got cards from Kenneth and Gloria Copeland telling me that they just listened to the greatest series they'd ever heard in their life, and sent me an offering of $400. I wish I still had the note. Goodness, all this stuff I've just thrown away as life has gone on. The man who got Copeland and Hagen in these big arenas became my personal friend. He was flying me into Ohio because he was beginning to groom me to be the person who would replace or exceed what these guys had done. He totally believed I would exceed what Hagen and Copeland had done in the Word of Faith movement. So I could have sat right there. But what did I have to do? I have to start learning more about grace and gospel of peace. And I couldn't keep my mouth shut. But you know what? I could have kept my mouth shut and just learned about grace like Joseph Prince did. Barris, when I first started introducing grace to Word of Faith people, I had offerings where people threw their wallets at me. Take what you want. This is no exaggeration. They threw their wallets at me. Well, these were some fat wallets, too, I'm telling you. Barris, if I would have stayed there, I'd have been just as wealthy and just as famous as Joseph Prince. But no, can't do that. Can't stay there and make money. Can't stay in the Word of Faith and make money. Can't stay in the ex-gay movement and make money. I got to tell the truth. I've got to say what is on my mind right now, not what was on my mind last week. And for some reason, that don't work as far as bringing money in is concerned. And you know what? I'm quite all right with it. Now, the only reason I'm not all right with where finances as we wind up on this last day of our pledge drive, the reason I'm not happy with where things are, folks, has nothing to do with me at all. If I wanted money, I would have stopped at one of three other stations before I ever got here. Well, why would I have done this? I could have incorporated the confession of sin doctrine, remained a gay man in any one of these doctrinal statements, Word of Faith or the New Grace teaching that took off 15 years ago, and just done like the rest of them do, confess their sins and just keep on going. But folks, I'm telling you, the gospel purges you of guilt, and in the absence of guilt comes truth. I don't know what that is. I don't know why it is. So this letter that we just got, I'm telling you, as you can tell, it sure brought back a blast from the past for me. And these different stations where that, as far as financially, Mike Williams Ministry, Mike Williams had three opportunities to be multi-million dollar ministries. Three different times. Instead, here we sit.
Well, that's a good segue. I mean, we could segue from here to a couple of different places that are on our agenda today, but let's talk about the pledge drive.
Yes, we're grateful. Thank you, guys. I've said before, it is not from lack of heart that this ministry is not a multi-million dollar ministry on the part of those working on this end of it or the people who are dedicated to supporting it. It's just our pond is so small that we have to fish in. Now it's growing. It is growing. Goodness gracious. It is growing, and I think as people come back around, just like what we've heard from Don, we've got thousands of people like that are waiting to hear again and to come back again and to find themselves once again wrapped up in the grace of God. But this pledge drive, folks did step up. We still are not in a position to where that our monthlies are where that they are going to cover our expenses. So we gradually, each time over a quarter, we gradually descend to the point of need. Coming right out of a pledge drive, we get the bills paid, we get caught up. It feels really great, and everything's hunky-dory. But because of our monthlies not being substantial enough to carry us through, we are going to come up on a next pledge drive in July or August, and we're going to need to do this again because we're going to fall behind. That's all there is to it. We don't have enough coming in a month to not fall behind. Cutting my salary, we did that. Barris's salary has never got up high enough to be cut. It is a cut salary, believe me.
Well, I did lose a bet last year and yielded back a month's income to the ministry, I think.
Yes, you did.
So I suppose a 12th cutback.
And I tried to talk you out of it because I knew you were going to lose the bet. So.
I'm never going to do that again, mate. I am never going to do that again.
And Jeff came to work for the ministry at $50 a week, busy from daylight to dark. Jeff's making more than 50 a week right now.
I think he's up to 56, if I remember right.
It's almost there, I think. But folks, there's just nobody's getting wealthy here, and not really seeking to be wealthy at all. There's just not this doesn't seem to be a heart or a goal or a plan of those that are involved. Hazel, goodness gracious, what about her? She works just as hard as some of the rest of us do, and she takes care of the she manages the offices and takes care of paying all of the bills, and she doesn't make anything at all. And we've borrowed money from her, for goodness sakes. And I think at the end of this pledge drive, we actually may have her paid back. I know we owe her $200 more. I'm going to try to get that last paid back to her at the first of this month. And if not, we'll have to wait 3 months until we can pay that last $200 back. Jeffrey, this is your day. This is the 30th of the month. So, Jeff, give us a rundown of what all these wonderful folks have done to help us do what we do.
Well, I'm just going to go through the entire list for this pledge drive. Starting with Donald Gwynn in Wasilla, Alaska, Robert Hines in McDonough, Georgia, Danny Meniscanians in Studio City, California, Arthur Wirtz in Brandon, Manitoba, and an Anonymous in Chandler, Arizona. And then our official sponsors start with Mike and Letty Kolb in Aurora, Colorado, Jackie Barnard in Wachuca City, Arizona, Todd and Angela Gray in LaPorte City, Iowa, Ron Fox in Chula Vista, California, Yvonne DeClean in Waterford, Wisconsin, Alan Davis in Chipley, Florida, Paul Viggers in New Milton, Hampshire, United Kingdom, Linda Villand in Madison, Wisconsin, Anonymous in Edmonton, Alberta, Pep Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin, Anonymous in Salford, Ontario, Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio, Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Mesa, Arizona, Alan Terry in Spokane, Washington, Tim and Beth Knappenberger in Canton, Ohio, and Lori Abraham in Red Deer, Alberta. Moving on, next step is the producers. We have Michael Bond in Marietta, Georgia, Dale Van Sickle in Lady Lake, Florida, Steve and Mary Keller in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Don and Judy Murphy in Billings, Montana, Richard and Pat Salonen in Lorium, Michigan, Robert and Don May in Marseille, Illinois, Suzanne Johnson in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, Terry Cadle, welcome Terry, she's new, and she is in Port Charlotte, Florida, John Newbigging in Edinburgh, Scotland, Stephen Chris Ann Panther in Waterloo, Iowa, Robert and Linda Parks in Mobile, Alabama, Bernie Rouse in Cadillac, Michigan, Carrie and Rita Waitman in Whitehall, Montana, Betty Cochran in Atoka, Oklahoma, Jerry and Susan Berman in Longwood, Florida. And finally, the executive producers, starting with Cliff and Katie Griffin in Gainesville, Georgia, Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona, Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona, Al Vitale in Gainesville, Georgia, Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta, Muriel Alexandrowski in North Palm Beach, Florida, James and Gail Gustafson in Estevan, Saskatchewan, Robert Vacanti in Ottertail, Minnesota, Leslie Kaza in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, Wayne Jensen in Bingham Lake, Minnesota, and Anonymous in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And that is everyone this go around.
Okay, let's just remind ourselves what folks who have given into our Spring 2015 pledge drive will be receiving as a thank you gift. Every new donor will every new donor is going to get their own pharisectomy certificate, stating that their inner pharisee has been removed with surgical precision by that master and teacher himself, Mike Williams. Now, every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be rewarded with an official sponsor certificate. These are really quite nice certificates, and you can put them up anywhere you like. They're a full 8x11 certificate, and they look great in a frame on your wall as a sponsor of the Gospel Revolution Powercast. Every monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with official producer certificates. These are real producerships, and unlike the ones in Movieland, we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked. You can put producer on your business cards and use its authentic value wherever these real endorsements are accepted. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annually will be awarded with official executive producer certificates. These carry the same weight as the producer certificates, and we hear that they attract a lot of attention when used on LinkedIn and other resume websites. So these are our ways of saying thank you to those of you who make it possible for this gospel to go out every week without fail. We love you all, and we hope you'll enjoy your certificates.
I want to thank all of our sponsors, our producers, and our executive producers, those of you who have entered into or have been in those levels of support for the ministry. We thank you so very much. And goodness, we're going to keep on going and possibly even do it even... How are we going to do it, Beerus?
How are we going to do what?
How are we going to keep on doing it? The same?
Oh, I see. It'll be better, though. Oh, that's a good gotcha.
That one was good.
Oh, you caught me napping.
Well, I saw your mouth drop open and look at me. It's like, yeah.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard, make a little sign, email or do Facebook? Anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel. Gotta get out the gospel. Gospel Revolution.
Just this last week, I got a phone call from a gentleman from Michigan, and he wanted to spend some time, drove here from Michigan, and we sat down and we had a 3-hour lunch, and it was a real, really wonderful time. Now, you got to hear from Don, who first heard the gospel 22 years ago. Now, this is a man who started hearing about 1 year ago. So let me play this for you.
Hi, Mike. Levon here. Just thought I would once again tell you how much I appreciated your graciousness to allow me to visit you and get to know you a little bit. I feel like that I needed to do that. I on this trip of traveling about 3,500 miles, I have listened to about 35 to 40 hours of Michael Williams' podcast. Feel like I have reached into your heart and looked into the depths of your soul, and all I saw was good. And as a testimony, as a result of that, I shared with my brother in the Lord in Fort Worth that he had been judged and found not guilty, that the law of sin and death had been abolished at the cross, that he was born into the righteousness of God, and that he has become the totality of the life of Jesus. And we shared for 2 days with a couple of him and his friend and another lady around the kitchen table, as I could not help but spill over the good news of redemption. had. We danced around the kitchen and held hands and had a glorious time. And the fruits were evident. Then my brother just soaked it all in and received the message of redemption with excitement. And so I wanted to share with you not only that my trip was a success, my arrow pointed in the right direction, but also the testimony of the gospel. I plan to do this again, another ministry trip of blessing in the future. So if you know of a need, a desperation that perhaps would be in my realm of help, keep me posted. I hope to meet you again. I'm sure I will be with you again. Let's keep in touch. Blessings to you.
How about that?
Mate, that is unbelievable. That is, well, it's not unbelievable. It's totally credible. But I wish that we taped everything that ever came in on your phone. I just love that.
It would be a treasure trove of encouragement for everybody who's ever put a dollar into the gospel revolution, because, folks, this type of impact in an individual's life is money can't buy that. There's all the money in the world could not purchase for this man what he received.
Mm.
But notice what he said. It's these power casts. Listen to 34 hours of podcast. My goodness, I didn't even know we'd done 34 hours of podcast.
That'd be, you know, we average about an hour and a quarter on these podcasts. Yeah. So that would be probably, that'd be 25 or 30 podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, thank you so much, LaVon. We appreciate you. He's already been a great blessing to my life and to the gospel. And, of course, now, did you hear him sharing the gospel with other people?
And dancing around the table.
And when you hear him explaining what he explained to them, it's like, I don't know why I needed to be there. I would have needed to be there. I would have had nothing to say whatsoever. I mean, when people get this, Bearse, they've got it.
Oh, and they can't help, like he said, he just couldn't help. It just flowed out of him. In fact, what you got to do sometimes is you got to muzzle yourself.
Exactly.
Depending on where you're at. That was a marvelous. Oh, thanks for bringing that to us, Michael.
Do not die. Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Do a
gospel revolution.
Mike, we have a question this week from Laurie Abraham. Calls himself Abe.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Hey Mike, is some of Acts old covenant content or what? Like Acts 1, 11, Acts 3, 19 through 21. Thank you, Mike. Abe. And still enjoying your podcast. Thank you. I sent you a small donation. Can't afford much more right now. My daughter's going to university and needs a car. But later I'll give you more." That's very sweet of you, Abe, and thank you.
Yes, thank you. And boy, I'm telling you what, these kids that need an education, they're just robbing the gospel right and left.
Oh, they are, yeah. We'd be on at least at the brighter end of Skid Row if only they just discarded their kids and gave us that money instead.
That's all they'd have to do is just forget the kids, you know? And thank goodness we can laugh about that, because, you know, there are ministries out there that are telling people, you know, forget your kids, sell your house. Oh goodness.
Yep.
Thank you so very much. Your graciousness in this is fantastic. And Bearse, I don't know right offhand what those verses are. If you'd pull them up for us, but I will begin by saying that as we do find the verses, That yes, the book of Acts is incredibly transitional. Most of the questions that come out of the book of Acts are about Ananias and Sapphira and also about King Herod. Now, we know from Peter, James, and John's teachings that they never fully understood the gospel of peace or the gospel of grace. They just didn't get it. So their understanding of these things would be, as you said, their understanding of the events would have been Old Testament understanding. So what were the verses?
Well, one was Acts 1:11 is, you men of Galilee, why stand you gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus which is taken from you into heaven shall so come in like manner as you've seen him go into heaven. Now, Mike will be teaching on this amongst among a whole lot of other Bible references.
Yes.
In Cullman, Alabama. And I'm not trying to tease you. I'm just, some of these things will be better explained after that. With the other one, it's an interesting one, Acts chapter 3, verse 19 through 21. Peter is preaching his famous sermon when several thousand people were added to the church, and he says, those things which God has showed by the mouth of all the prophets that Christ should suffer, he has so fulfilled. This is a past tense look. He's saying it's already happened. Then he says this, repent ye therefore and be converted that your sins may be blotted out when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord. And he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. Okay, I think the first thing I'd say is we are talking with people who were not priests, they were not scribes, they were not experts in the law, they were simply your run-of-the-mill, garden-variety citizens of Jerusalem who went about their everyday, well, actually, they weren't even citizens of Jerusalem. Galilee is where the Peter did his fishing. Jesus was raised as a carpenter, with the exception possibly of John. We're talking about largely illiterate people. Luke, it was obviously an educated person, and Luke is writing this as part two of a history that he's giving to someone called Theophilus. We think it might Theophilus could have been somebody high up in the Roman hierarchy, but we really don't know. We've only got really just conjecture to work with. However, we have to remember that none of these people were a Christian in the sense of today's Christians. These are the people who felt that circumcision was still a must. It was Jesus plus circumcision. These are the people who were still very steeped in Jewish culture and Jewish religion. And you cannot be steeped in Jewish religion and culture without totally bypassing the freedom that grace brings us, the peace with God that that his death brought us. You can't have a foot in both camps. If you try to sit on the fence, you're going to tear your trousers is what's going to happen. If you're going to try and walk down the middle of the road, you're going to get run over. And this is what the early apostles found themselves doing. Now, that not because I think, Michael, I don't think they did it because they were trying to be tricky. I think they did it because, as you said, it was a transitional period of, well, how do we move from here to there? We know the old religion was true. But how can we go from that true to, and we know that Jesus rose from the dead, how can we go from that true to this true? How do we join these dots? And yeah, this is what they didn't really get. If you want to see how much they were still enforcing the Jewish law, just read the letters of John to the seven churches of Asia in Revelation 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. I challenge you to read that and not come away with a distinct understanding that they were very much law-based. So yes, I believe that whole tracts of the New Testament, much of Acts, Peter, James, John, even in the Gospels, I believe that most of it was old covenant thinking. The only person who appeared to be able to rise above this milieu who appeared to be able to rise above this constricted thinking was Paul. And even Paul, at times, you can see him nutting his way through this stuff. Well, hang on, if this is so, what about, on the other hand, oh, I see, it all fits together like this, which is called the dialectic style of logic.
Yes, and
you know what just happened then?
What?
It's very unusual. I just ran out of words. I just stopped there and I ran out of words.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's like watching the water being turned off. It's like, okay. Now, I got to say something. Don't have to, but I guess I will. One thing, Abe, thank you so much because your question has tied together an event and a reason for an event for me, because the second verses that you quoted says that Jesus must need that they did not understand that the work of Christ was completed.
Mm.
Now, listen to this, Barris. In that second verse, he said, basically, because Jesus didn't get the job done, he must need to be received back up into heaven until he comes back again. Well, now we know why they had to come up with we saw him go up into heaven. Because their doctrine didn't believe he had gotten the job done. So now I'm in great doubt because, see, your doctrine will create visions. Your doctrine will create all kinds of revelations. And their doctrine believed that Jesus did not finish the work at the cross. He obviously said, you know, wow, Jesus came, sin, but hey, look for this wonderful day that's coming. When everything will eventually get done this time, and because it didn't get done the first time, Jesus had to be received up into heaven until he can come back and finish up the work.
On a white horse with all of his saints.
Exactly.
Bringing retribution and blood knee deep.
Yeah, I am at this point convinced that the story of Jesus, them watching Jesus go up into heaven, instead of it being a real event, I really believe that it was their need to fulfill their doctrine.
Are you sure you want to go here?
I do want to go there.
Are you sure you want to go there on this PowerCast?
I do.
Okay. You got it.
We got to stir people up about something to respond.
There are two things that almost all biblical scholars, now I'm talking about atheists, agnostics, and Christians, agree without these two things, Christianity could never have been born. One was the resurrection or the belief in the resurrection. And you've got to remember that the death of Jesus occurred in Jerusalem. The resurrection is alleged to have occurred in Jerusalem. And these people are preaching this stuff in Jerusalem. You don't get to preach stuff in a city where there's any number of witnesses can say, oh, get out of here. What a bunch of jerks you are. You can't do that. And this is where the Christian movement gained most of its traction. Now, the other thing that is important to remember is, as we saw in Calgary, when you look at the proofs for the resurrection, one of them is the fact that these disciples, they all preached Jesus dead, buried, resurrected, and disappearing off into the blue.
Yeah.
So this is some pretty interesting ground that you're opening up, mate. I hope the earth doesn't swallow you.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, we've got the prophecies that cover the first of their doctrines, his death, his burial, his resurrection. The third one that they come up with of the ascension doctrines, I don't know of it being any place in the scriptures, number one. And now that Abe has presented to us, I've never connected these two together. I did not know that they needed to believe that Jesus had to – that's so incredible. They had to believe that Jesus ascended into heaven again because he didn't finish the work. He's got to go back to heaven to come back to earth again.
I don't okay. I'm not sure that I'd agree with that, because the Jewish concept of heaven, well, there was no Jewish concept of heaven. So how could he have? And of course, the word heaven, when the ascension story is told in early Acts, is the word Uranus, which simply means into the skies. It doesn't mean the heaven that Christians teach is a heaven, where there's streets of gold and a river and the trees and Jesus there and all the dogs are happy and all the, that's not the heaven that is referred to in the early chapter of Acts. So,
well, I'm just talking about what he says, what it says. I read that second one and see if he does not say that because that Jesus must be received back into heaven because he's got to come back again.
Whom the heaven, this is verse 21, Abe, good for you, buddy. This is the sort of stuff that we love to get our teeth into. Acts chapter 3, verse 21, whom, Jesus Christ, the heaven must receive until the times of restitution. Well, what the heck is that? Restitution of all things. Now, Paul said that in him all things consist.
Exactly.
That in Jesus Christ everything consists. Now, Paul only wrote that a few years after this, so what we're looking at, I think, is the evolution of the early theology that that prevailed in the mindsets of these people. They didn't really know what to think, I don't think. Let me just have a look at something here. Whom the Uranus must receive or accept. Probably better to say accept. Whom the heavens must, the only way to honestly read this verse is this. Jesus Christ, whom the blue skies must accept until the Kronos, not the Kairos. Kairos is seasons, Kronos is times, or a space of time, or maybe an age, of the reconstitution. Holy dooly. This is not restitution as we know it, this word.
It's the bringing together of.
Yeah, it is. It's a apokatastasis. It's a word that I'm seeing around the web a fair bit as people are starting to get their eyes open to the reconstitution, the remakings, the recreation, the new creation, a new creation. I'm just dabbling for words here. Whom the blue skies must accept until the time of the reconstitution of all. Not just all, things is not in the original, of all.
Yeah.
It could be a person, people, it could be things, which God has chatted or spoken by the mouth of all his of all his holy prophets since the world began.
Mm. See, they're accepting the fact, Barris, and here is where the doctrine of the disciples and the doctrine of Paul is separate. They're accepting the fact of the bringing together of all in one. They're just saying the cross didn't do it. They're not convinced that the cross made that much difference.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, because if you take the average, now there's a couple of prevailing thoughts. Praetorism, for example, that says that everything was finished at AD 70. Redemptionism says, no, it all happened at the cross. Now, it doesn't matter if you're a praetorist or a redemptionist. Christianity will tell you, you're trying to put it into the past, what is obviously going to be in the future. And what we're saying is, yes, and you're trying to put into the future what obviously happened in the past.
And when you have a stance like that, you come up with statements you have to make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior. Now, that would be hard, fast doctrine in Christianity, yet it's nowhere in the Bible.
Nowhere. But I think we'd agree it's a man-made bridge.
Yes.
To join the dots in a way that is acceptable to the masses.
Which is exactly what I'm saying, that they're purportedly seeing Jesus being caught up into the heavens is a part of the bridge to make their doctrine work.
So if we're talking they actually saw it, we're talking mass hallucination.
At least in this concept, they saw him ascend with the anticipation of him coming back again.
But if this is alliteration or allegorical, I don't think there's any argument against the fact that it could be allegorical, could there?
No, not at all. But if the allegory is about Jesus coming back again to do what he failed to do the first time, the allegory fails. Jesus can come here, back here, to here, manifest himself here, there, anywhere he wants to, anytime he wants to. But for the reasons that Christianity say he's coming and would manifest himself again, I can tell you absolutely 100% is error. It is complete error, and it's an insult to the work of the cross. According to Acts chapter 3, they were persuaded that the heavens had to receive him again because he had to come back again. And they had, and they would have had to develop supporting experiences to reinforce that. I can't tell you that whether they did or not. The one thing that I can tell you is that of the things, Bears, that you mentioned became a part of the apostles' doctrine, three of them I can show you in the scriptures. That fourth one about him coming back again is not in the scriptures.
I think you've just opened a big can of worms.
I know. I love it.
Could this be madness? What did you hear? What you heard might not be perfectly clear. Take a stand, now we'll be right here. Call questions of the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
I had a letter from somebody asking this question, but I went back through and I looked for the letter. I couldn't find it. So whoever it was that asked a question about how do we enter into affirmative action on the basis of our oneness with God, I'm going to read what Jeff said, but please forgive me for having lost your letter. I'm very sorry. Jeff wrote this. I saw on our Facebook page, Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. He wrote, "A friend of mine once told me after listening to some PowerCasts, I get what you're saying, but what is the application? How do you apply it? I've also taken countless phone calls from people who in the first phone call asked, how do I do this or how do I do that? My immediate response has always been the same. I will give you no how-tos. Many of them contacted me weeks or months later and told me a similar story. They told me how mad that made them, that I would not give them a how-to. Yet they appreciated it later because the truth of the gospel started doing its own thing with them. I just stayed with them over several calls, reiterating the gospel when they had a question or expounding upon it. Either way, the gospel applied itself. What is the application of truth? I have no formula, but I do have a truth to share." And, mate, talk about gobsmack. This is a wonderful thing that he finishes this up with. "I do have a truth to share. You won't accept truth until you are willing to find out what it really is." That was Jeff Robertson. I know, I'm so sorry, this gentleman, the other gentleman who wrote in with almost an identical question, how do we apply affirmatively the truth of oneness with God? He also mentioned a book by somebody, and if I can find that, I'll put it to air before I'll edit that in later in the show.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was very true. I this is again another flashback. The thing that has been most consistent in the teaching, especially about grace and law, is the what do we do now question. That, of course, Jeff is still getting that question to this day. And but it is this desperation of needing to know what do we do? What do we do? Now that I'm free, what do I do? Well, you do what a free person does, and you do what you want to do. That really seems to be a very difficult concept when we have been brainwashed to think there's something you got to do to be in the will of God, to be accepted by God, to go to heaven, to be approved of God, to be in one of the three levels of God's will, the good, the acceptable, and the perfect will. You might miss the perfect, but you could be in the good. You might miss the good, but you could be in the acceptable. When our minds have been absolutely corrupted with those thoughts, we need to know what to do. And sitting back and telling somebody you're free, the first thing a free person wants to know is, what do I do? And where it comes to relationship with God, please, I'm begging you, do nothing. Do nothing. Where relationship with God is concerned, do nothing. And in that, you will begin to find the power of this gospel working in the heart and mind, just as Jeff has explained to you here in this letter. You'll find the gospel doing its own work in its own way with you individually, as it would work with you and only you in that way.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and get your copy of Robert Hines' fantastic publication, Redemption, A Declaration for All and Not a Choice for a Few. We sure love it, even though we don't make a dime off it. Kindle edition is $7.95. A hard copy, just contact Bob Hines through his website, www.thetruegospel.net. And my friend Charles says that it's blowing his brains out. He loves the book. He does, Mike. It's
wonderful.
Oh, it's like a college education in redemptionism. It's just wonderful.
It is indeed.
You know, you, our listeners, are the real stars of the gospel revolution. You may be a virgin listener or have been following the message for years, but if you're a virgin giver, we'd like to ask you to break the drought and call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey about how you can join the amazing people who keep this gospel of grace and peace going out every week. Dollar a day, nothing to most people, but to us it makes all the difference between business as usual and reaching so many more ears with the sounds of freedom. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? You can email freedom@gospelrevolution.com or you can dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com and on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas. Guys, we sure do love you. Thank you for all that you did during the month of April, the pledge drive. Gosh, you guys always are the greatest. And looking forward to seeing you in Cullman. We'll be reminding you of that over the next few weeks. And I'm learning some things that I think we're going to have a good time talking about. We're throwing a little bit of them out to you, just kind of not just to tease you, but to let you know we're going to be talking about some real stuff. And I'm calling Beres almost on a daily basis, bugging him with need to help me run through something through the Greek or the Hebrew. So anyway, we love you. Thank you. I had a wonderful time on this show, and I hope that you did too.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
It's good enough for me. Let us pray with Aphrodite. Let us pray with Aphrodite. She wears that see-through nightie, and it's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Good enough for me. We will pray with Zarathustra. We'll pray just like we used to. I'm a Zarathustra booster, and it's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. We will pray with those Egyptians, build pyramids to put our crypts in, cover subways with inscriptions, and it's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough. Oh, let's play on. Pray with those old druids. They drink fermented fluids, waltzing naked through the woods, and it's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. Hare Krishna, he must laugh on to see me dressed in saffron with my hair that's only half on, and it's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me. I will rise at early morning when my Lord gives me the warning that the solar age is dawning, and that's good enough for me. Oh, give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me.